Hello there, and welcome to another episode of What Do You Call It podcast. I'm your host, GB. Today's guest is one of the best interviewers in wrestling right now. He's interviewed some of the best wrestlers from the UK and around the world. He's not just a guest, but he's someone I'm actually quite proud to call a mate. And I've met him as well last year. And I'd like to welcome the host of Wrestling with John's podcast, John Scott. John, how you doing today?
Brilliant, brilliant. Lovely to be on your show. I've seen a lot of your episodes. Big fan of yours, George. Big up to you and your show and everything you've done. And recently interviewed Scott D'Amore as well. I mean, come on, doesn't get much bigger than that.
It's still not sunk in, to be honest, that interview. I'm just doing it in person.
No, like I said, I'm just delighted to be on your show and just to chat wrestling and whatever else comes up, really. But we did meet just over a year ago. I think it was Clash at the Castle in Cardiff.
It was the queue for the Superstore.
Man, that queue just went on for days, didn't it? Yep. And
I think didn't we end up got buying anything, though, since I saw the price.
Well, I mean, I bought a program just because, I don't know, maybe it's something I did back in SummerSlam 92. So I got a program then. I had to get one 30-odd years later. Mm-hmm. I got a T-shirt. I was tempted to walk out without anything in my hands. But, it was a fantastic day.
Yeah, it was really good.
Brilliant, brilliant. And like I say, the whole atmosphere of that day in Cardiff, the whole event, inside the Principality, the fans were really up for it. Saw a great day of wrestling action, but we didn't get the ending we're all after, George. We didn't get the ending we're
well,
after.
Well, that's quite funny. It's like Drew's homecoming. It's like he's Scottish, Welsh. But I get what they mean, though, like British and Britain and representing the UK and all that. Fantastic show. I was gutted, though. Yeah. I mean, I do like Roman Reigns, but I got caught up in the moment, caught up in the feud. Drew's going to do it. It's Drew's time to shine. Do it in front of the first stadium show in, 20 years? It's going to happen. And it's like, oh, fuck this.
But that's it. I think we're all hoping that they were going to give us that British Bulldog feel, that British Bulldog moment from 30 years earlier. And we didn't get it. But, in hindsight, maybe it was for the best, because you look at what Roman Reigns has been able to achieve with the Universal Championship, albeit he's only defended it like 4 or 5 times this year. But still, I think it's added to his legacy. And it's just a shame that Drew didn't get his moment in front of fans. But I digress.
Hello there. I've got a special announcement for my next guest.
You are listening to the Sweet Prince of Professional Wrestling, one half of Act 2, Benjamin Harland, and I will be appearing on What Do You Call It podcast.
Ooh, better than What You Call It podcast. Listen to the episode and you'll get the reference. I just want to touch on there, so we just took a quick break there. SummerSlam 92, jealous. I would have only been 2 or 3 years old, so even if I had gone, I'm not going to remember a fucking thing. Tell me more about that before we get to the podcasting and you actually becoming one of the best in podcasting in terms of wrestling and how you conduct yourself and just your overall presentation. I really admire how you do it.
Oh, thank you, George. Yeah, no, happy to kind of talk about all of that in a moment. But SummerSlam 92, I'd only just become a wrestling fan, a proper wrestling fan. I know that my nan introduced me to wrestling back in the 80s when I would go and visit her on a Saturday afternoon, and I'd hear all this hollering and shouting and screaming, what the hell is going on?
This can't be around
put my head around the corner. Of course, she's watching World of Sports, shaking her walking stick at the TV, shouting at all the villains on the TV. So that was my first kind of introduction to pro wrestling, was World of Sport. Thanks to my nan. If it weren't for that and kind of, you know, the love that she had for it back in the 80s, I don't think I probably would have been talking about it now. But then obviously World of Sport ended in 88. Then the WWF came onto our shores big time. It kind of exploded over here, became a phenomenon like 1990, 1991. Doing all these UK tours. I went on my first WWF UK tour or UK show just after WrestleMania 8. in April of 1992. And then my second ever show was SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium. And it doesn't really get any bigger, more grand, more special, more crazy than that. And I just remember my dad didn't drive, so we got on a coach from Oxford down to London, down to Wembley with a couple of my friends. There was me, my dad, two friends. We had cheap seats right at the very back. This was the old Wembley Stadium with the Twin Towers and the flags and everything. But the atmosphere of the day, the weather was gorgeous. Just remember kind of turning up the stadium, blue skies, this whole sea of people, sea of merchandise.
That long as well, like the blue carpet, that's really iconic, mate. Now, the entrance. Just, it must have been like a mile or something.
It was, like I say, being there, watching entrances from the likes of the Legion of Doom on their Harleys, the Undertaker on the back of a hearse, you know, Shawn Michaels, and then, of course, you know, that main event, Bret Hart versus Bulldog, which...
John, sorry to cut off, you're forgetting one person.
Go on, who did I forget?
Virgil's entrance, mate.
You're right, I did forget. I did forget because I could remember it. Him versus Nails, wasn't it? Probably one of the worst.
Obviously.
of course. But strangely, Virgil was massively over. I think he was popular off the back of his feud with Ted DiBiase from the year before.
Yep.
He did have, quite a bit of a following. Nails was the new heel. And I was quite interested. Yeah, I was quite interested by the feud, but the match didn't really live up to the hype, did it, George? I think Dave Meltzer was
classic from Dave Meltzer.
He was so tempted to give it 5 stars, but no, I think it got negative 5 stars in the end. But and like I say, that main event just made up for.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the entrances from the undercard were what stand out to me, but that main event between Bret Hart and Bulldog was what made it special, what made it memorable. Clash at the Castle kind of brought back some of their memories, and All In at the new Wembley this year with AEW brought it all back again. So we've been very lucky over on the UK shores from not having anything for 30 years to having two big pay-per-views, or three if you include Money in the Bank, within the space of 12 months. So,
And for you to be a part of it as well, it's just, I can see, like, just you, like, telling me the stories now, you're smiling, and I can tell, it's just never going to leave your mind. I'm glad that you did touch on sort of your origins and how you got into wrestling, because I was going to touch on that as well. But I want to ask you what actually kind of inspired you to become a podcaster. And actually, just to mention as well, this is your 5th anniversary. So you're 5 years in this game. It's not easy. I mean, I've wanted to give up for a while, and I'll give you credit, Michael, you'll come to in a minute, Michael Jolly, shout out to him, really nice person.
Yeah.
And you guys kind of motivate me and kept me in it. And just seeing your content as well, it is doable. But just before we do touch on that, tell me what actually got you into it. What inspired you?
Yeah, a great question. And, there's always an origin story to these sort of things. And I think mine, off the back of being such a long-term wrestling fan, of course, wrestling podcasts became popular early 2010s. And I certainly remember around 2013, 2014, you had like the Stone Cold Sessions, and you had Chris Jericho's podcast. And I used to listen to, Flash Morgan Webster's podcast. He interviewed a lot of the UK talents back in the mid 2010s. And the Solar Monster Sounds Off and things like that. I would listen to all the podcasts. It was like back in my youth when I would go to the newsagents and buy all the wrestling magazines off the shelf.
Oh, Slam.
Power Slam, everything. But in the 2010s, it's just like consuming all the information you can through podcasts. And that's exactly what I did. And I had my favorites. But it wasn't until Something to Wrestle with Conrad Thompson and Bruce Pritchard came on the scene in 2016. And their fascinating kind of look back over wrestlers' history, their origin stories.
Impressions by Bruce as well.
Oh, yeah. That was the wrestling podcast, wasn't it? That was the one to listen to and to get all your information. And just,
room with Conrad and Bruce.
Man, and I'll be honest with you, being a WWE or WWF lifer, I never knew who Bruce Pritchard was. I never knew who Bruce Pritchard was.
I knew who Brother Love was, but I didn't know the same
thing. Yeah, 100%. But, he was always a behind-the-scenes kind of, who we need seeing at the gorilla position, or you know, being fired by Vince McMahon multiple times. You know, I didn't know who he was until he started this podcast, and you became intrigued by him, and you know, and about his journey in the business and all the many, many people that he encountered. And it was that that really inspired me, to be honest with you. Of course, that was 2016. Still hooked on tons of wrestling podcasts, but it was actually going to WrestleMania 34, 2018 in New Orleans. And as soon as I knew that it was in New Orleans, I thought, right, got to get myself out there. Got to get myself out there. So,
Roman, you know, my the second one.
Oh, yes, the yes. Fact, that's the
it
one.
Did suck, to be fair, but the actual show itself, take away that main event and maybe take on Cena. I think the show's brilliant and very underrated. Ronda Rousey's debut. Love that.
Yeah.
The triple threat, Finn Balor, Miz, and Seth Rollins.
Were you there?
No. I'm just a nerd. So when it comes to like any pay-per-view prior to like 2018-19, I'd say, I've got a very good memory of the card. Anything after, like if we're talking about like last year.
But it was just, you know, being out there, the whole occasion, 5 days out in New Orleans all by myself. Of course,
really?
A bit of a... absolutely. And I wanted to do it. Had the opportunity to do it. Got given, you know, full blessings from my wife to go out there and enjoy myself, have fun, and live my dream out there, to be honest with you. And got out there on the Thursday before WrestleMania. Within 10 minutes, I was down Bourbon Street, just having the time of my life. Mate, I've got the first four videos on my YouTube channel are of my day one, day two, day three, and day four kind of like vlogs. Please go and check them out. They really, really are awesome. And day one is just like Party Central down Bourbon Street, and just with all the guys, and you know, thousands of people down Bourbon Street just singing and chanting to wrestling themes and getting themselves all hyped. Of course, I was there for WWE Access and the Superstore and NXT TakeOver New Orleans, which in my opinion is probably one of the very best NXT TakeOvers ever.
Incredible match.
Just
like what a match. The six-man ladder match.
The ladder match, you had Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, Andrade versus Aleister Black for the NXT Championship. Adam Cole with double duty, becoming the first North American champion. Shayna Baszler beating Ember Moon for the championship. It just all happened. That's absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, WrestleMania, which was great. On paper, it looked completely stacked from top to bottom. Of course, it was Ronda Rousey's debut, Kurt Angle's return, Daniel Bryan's return. And my match of the night was Triple H and Stephanie versus Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey. I just thought
amazing
match. And you would never have called it. You know, it's obviously rehearsed a million times before they went out there. But just
still has
the way, the way that they pulled it off and just got us drawn in as fans, and we were biting at everything. Yeah, just absolutely fantastic. But anyway, I digress, because going back to your question.
Podcasting.
I was sitting in, it was either New Orleans Airport or Philadelphia Airport on the way back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I had all this kind of playlist, this queue of podcasts I wanted to listen to on the journey back, because it's like an 8-hour flight. And I thought, I could do this. I have a little bit of a voice. I have a fair bit of knowledge. Because of course that would have been in the April. And then, of course, I had to pluck up the courage and come up with the idea, come up with the name of the show, come up with the concept. And then November 2018, I started Wrestling with Jonas. Strangely or coincidentally, Wrestling with Jonas started off as a review show. And episode one of Wrestling with Jonas coincided with episode one of WWE NXT UK, which debuted on the WWE network that very same week. So I just kind of reviewed NXT UK, and then it kind of branched off into reviewing pay-per-views and AEW Dynamite when that started, the Black and Gold brand. Then I started doing interviews and, you know, onwards and upwards.
I
but,
the interviews part, because I think that's where I can kind of... Basically, that's kind of inspired me as well. You know, just started off wanting to do reviews, and I was like, actually, I actually enjoy speaking to people. But I want to know about, I know with the reviews and stuff, but what kind of like led you to kind of make the transformation from doing pay-per-view reviews and TV reviews to actually conducting interviews with the wrestlers? Had you kind of been into meeting wrestlers prior to this, you know, like meet and greets or before the show or whatever?
No, not at all. Like I said, I went to some indie shows over here in the UK back in the kind of mid 2010s, and I attended one or two meet and greets. Yep. One in Swindon, and of course 4FW was the big promotion then in Swindon. I went to one of their shows. X-Pac was kind of the big import at the time with 4FW during that show, so I had a meet and greet with him. Obviously did the meet and greets at Fan Access at WrestleMania. Otherwise, no. And honestly, I'm naturally quite a shy, insular person, to be honest with you.
Very hard to believe.
Yeah, not naturally not outgoing at all.
I don't mean that in a negative way, either. It's just you're very confident. If someone listens to the recent episodes, right, and just goes, and after you saying, oh, I'm shy, they'll be like, nah, he's fucking lying. He's taking the piss. Even when I met you in, like, Cardiff last year, like, whatever, like, you were absolutely nice. I think you just want to acknowledge me first because I was with my mates and I didn't realise because I think you was... then I was like, oh, you're right, mate. You're like, cool. And we had, like, a nice little chat. But yeah, no, tell me more, mate, about you being shy and then...
Yeah, well, I think I always was from a child, to be honest with you. And, you know, yeah, shy at school, quite quiet when I first started work. And I think that my career initially, I was in retail, customer service, that led me into management. So as I kind of progressed through my career, certainly in management, you honestly have to kind of put on a bit of a front, put on a bit of a face, puffy chest out and kind of, you know, speak to customers and staff and senior management and that sort of thing. So that helps to build your confidence. Yeah, I mean, just to give you an example, when I started wrestling with Johnners, it's incredible to think how I started because I just had this really crappy laptop, set of microphone headset. And I think the first episode of Wrestling with Johnners was probably about 35 minutes long, but it probably had about 4,000 cuts in it, where I think after every word, I would stop and then join it together. So it kind of sounded like a sentence, took me half an hour to get that, you know, so it's like, my God, it was awful. I would not want to go back and listen to them early episodes. But how things change. So, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because I think a lot of wrestling fans, you know, are quite lacking confidence.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, and because it's kind of one of them hobbies that you kind of get attracted to. And it's usually the quiet kids that wouldn't be so outgoing, you know, probably weren't involved in clubs or things like that, would sit at home and either play computer games or watch professional wrestling. And I was one of those.
Or staying up in the morning to watch it.
Exactly. And I think that when you ask a lot of professional wrestlers and they all grew up wrestling fans, and a lot of them grew up quite shy and, you know, not very outgoing. And you wouldn't know that because of their wrestling persona or the kind of character they portray on the TV or in front of hundreds of fans every week. But that is, and I suppose, a bit like podcasting, bit of a character, a bit of a persona, a bit of a front that you put on, you know, for your audience or for the content. I suppose in a different life or in different circles, I probably wouldn't be like this. But what it has done, podcasting, is given me the confidence, you know, in general, in life and as a human being. And I think it's given me so many skills that I wouldn't have had before. Everything from, you know, being able to produce an interview, being able to, you know, script out the notes for some content, or being able to edit, video edit, audio edit a podcast, graphic design, you know, reaching out to people.
You do all your own designs, you do the graphics, you advertise.
Yeah.
I mean, so you've got the network, which we will come to later on, but people don't realise like how much you input in your own products.
Oh, 100%. Occasionally I do outsource my thumbnails. Mm-hmm. To the wonderful Elliot Marriott on Instagram. Really, really good. For two reasons. A, he's a much better graphic designer than I ever will be. And if it's for a big guest like, let's see, like Scotty Too Hotty, for example, good example, or a Lizzie Evo, or like this month, for example, I got him to design my thumbnails for Lana Rostin and for Session with Martina, because A, they're big guests and I don't want to mess up on, you know, I didn't want it to look shoddy when I've got such big guests on. So I would kind of outsource it to him. He always does a marvellous job, and it saves me a lot of time as well, because these things don't take 10 minutes, they take a little while. So Elliot Marriott, if you're listening, shout out to you. Love you loads. But yeah, like I say, I take a lot of pride in every element of what I do. Yeah. Did that answer your question? I can't even remember where we started there.
It did, mate. I understand it. And I think the listeners out there will appreciate your honest answer as well. I actually want to follow up on the big guests that you've had and just guests in general. Have you ever found yourself, just to show that you are human, have you ever found yourself being nervous in terms of preparation for a big guest? And if you have, how did you find yourself preparing for that specific interview? You don't have to say any names, but any interviews that you thought, oh, it's going to be quite a difficult one, I've seen him in the past, or just in general, oh, I'm actually a really big fan of him, I don't want to come across as a fan either, because you're very professional with how you conduct yourself. But I want to know if there's any big interviews that you found yourself, okay, I'm going to do this differently, I'm going to prepare, I'm just going to, you know, whatever, take a different direction to this podcast.
That's a really, really great question. And I'm very fortunate because the majority of the guests that I have on my show, I will have met at an indie show that I will have been working at. So I would already have had that kind of connection, that bit of relationship. I would have already broke the ice with them. And quite often they'll come onto my show because they like me, because they trust me, because they've worked with me before. I might have interviewed them in a backstage capacity before. So that's kind of great for me. It does give me a little bit of an advantage.
Love over some others. I'm just going to quickly just reminds me, there's a bit like Mean Gene to it. There's definitely an old school feel. And I've had like my show and they've praised you for your backstage interview skills.
Oh, thank you so much. A lot of effort goes into that. I mean, we can talk about that in a minute. But so I've already got that kind of connection with some of these top stars. Yeah. But when it comes to, honestly, I'll speak about a recent example, Session with Martina. I was a little bit nervous going into it, and I'll be honest with you, I always feel nerves and a little bit of pressure going into every single interview, because I want it to be good, and because if I didn't feel the pressure, I probably wouldn't care enough to do it in the first place. So I always kind of put that pressure on me to make sure that it's the best possible interview. But Session with Martina in particular, I think it's an interesting one, because naturally she plays what a larger-than-life character, a very larger-than-life persona.
A character.
Yeah. Oh, mate, she brings the bants.
She's awesome. She's awesome. But that's, I don't think that's the word you'd use to describe Session One.
But, I like to kind of break the fourth wall with my guests, and I don't like to talk to them in character. And I've done one or two in character where they are in character, and it's the hardest interviews I've ever done. And I can probably talk about that in a minute. But with somebody like Session with Martina, you think about it and you think, well, she's probably one of the biggest independent names in the UK, in Europe. Oh, let's think about it. Probably one of the biggest independent names in the world. She's pretty much done everything. She told me during her interview that she's probably one of the busiest UK workers on the scene, with the amount of bookings that she picks up. Thinking, yeah, I don't want to mess this one up, you know. But obviously, I think I could be more nervous with every single guest, but I put so much preparation into every single interview that my rule of thumb is that if I feel I don't know that person inside out, back to front and upside down before we start talking on camera, then I haven't done enough research. Because although I might have already had this little bit of a bond moment, worked with them briefly backstage, chatted to them, gained their trust at shows, you know, I still got to put the groundwork in, I still got to put the effort in. I feel that if my notes and my prep, if it doesn't sound like I know I'm that person's best friend when we start talking, then I haven't done the prep that's required.
And I think purples, though, say, like, I know what you mean in terms of preparation, but say like something like you didn't know once said on a podcast and it's something they just revealed, would you still be comfortable around that? Like, you know, just a genuine surprise.
Yeah, because I mean, I like my interviews very much like yourself to be very conversational, very free flowing. And if it goes off on a tangent, I think that's all the better, to be honest with you, as far as I'm concerned. But I have my prep and my notes there as a safety net and as a guide for how the interview is going to go. But if it goes off, you know, sideways, then that's absolutely fine. I can pull it back in, but then we can go off on a tangent and we can discuss, you know, whatever weird and wonderful wacky stories they have to tell. And obviously, I mentioned about the prep and kind of knowing that person inside and out before we start talking. And that's because all of my interviews are live. So, you know, there is no stops, starts, no cuts, no edits. My interviews are produced more like TV shows than they are podcasts, not just because they're in video, but because I do so much extra with it and the live aspect, pulling up videos on screen and pictures on screen and live questions, live comments from the people watching at home. So I produce it very much differently to how I used to when it was just an audio show. I produce it very much like a TV show. That kind of, I've been doing it live now for nearly 3 years since the beginning of 2021. And I think that's really helped to kind of sharpen my skills as a content creator and as a host and as an interviewer. I think since I've started doing it live, I've enjoyed it so much more because there's this kind of feeling, there's this kind of vibe about doing it live. And, you know, you're not necessarily flying by the seat of your pants because, like I say, I've done my prep. I know I'm confident going in. Yeah. But it does kind of give this extra kind of fun and exciting element to it that I don't think you can get by not doing it live, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, I admire you for that. I don't necessarily have the bottle to do it myself. I'm not quite as confident as people think, kind of like opposite you. People think I'm really confident and I can talk for days stuff. I wouldn't say I'm more shy. I would say I'm definitely more awkward in terms of how I word things and say things and just outside of the podcast and talking to you and just in real life. It's not to say I'm awkward as in, like, you know, I'm gonna be a school shooter or anything like that. It's just in terms of I operate in a different way.
No, I totally get it. We've all been there. You know, if like yourself and like several other content creators, podcasters that I can mention, you know, we've all been there. And you know, I definitely been at that awkward stage. There's been some interviews that I've just wanted to go, can we stop now, please? Can I go home now?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Mummy. Then you just take a deep breath.
Yeah.
You just crack on with it. Because I think sometimes if you mess up during a interview, if you make a mistake or if you kind of say something incorrect or if you, you know, spew out some interesting facts or things that aren't quite factual, then I think sometimes that adds to a bit of an element of the extra fun and excitement. Yeah, anything can happen, and you just roll with it. And I think it's how you roll with it. If you make a mistake, that's the most important thing. So, I mean, if you are an aspiring podcaster, but you're kind of too afraid to take that leap, I say just take that leap, do it, because you're going to make mistakes. Don't be afraid, well, I'm not going to start because I'm going to make mistakes. We've all made mistakes. We've made every mistake under the sun, and we still do every single day. But if you don't make their mistakes, you're not going to get better, and you're not going to know how good you can get, and you're not going to enjoy what is an amazing kind of medium for wrestling fans. You know, if you've got a love for wrestling and you've got a voice, you want to express yourself, podcasting is the best way to do it, and anybody can do it. And you might start with one listener, two listeners, but who cares? The fact that one person's listening to what you're doing was mind blowing to me. Absolutely mind blowing.
And they've got an audience, and a community. Now, one of the discuss, and we've got a mutual friend, like I mentioned at the beginning, Michael Jolly. He does so much, not just for the community, but for us as well, and the guests and those within the community. You know, he helps the guests, he will share everything and just does what he can to those involved, and just a good person in general. But I just want to talk about the community that you've started. And why did you start it? And what does it mean to you?
The main reason why I started, are you referring to the network, McDonald's Podcast the Network? So that started in early 2020. So I probably would have been just over a year into this thing. And I used to work with and for a streaming platform called Turnbuckle TV. Mm-hmm. And they would have lots of UK independent footage on their streaming platform of promotions from all over the UK. They invited me in as a bit of an interviewer, kind of fairly early on into my journey, and I would do interviews for them. It would go up on their platform. They then transition from Turnbuckle TV to Powered 4 TV. This all happened during the lockdown. So, you know, they pretty much had to start from scratch. They were using me up until 2021. I can't remember exactly. But around the same time, I thought, okay, I remember what it was like to start off as a grassroots podcast. I remember what it was like to start with absolutely no experience, with absolutely no equipment, with absolutely not an idea of how to do this. But I started it from the beginning, built up quite a bit of knowledge in a fairly short space of time. First of all, I got the website built, amazingly, built by my son, who is a computer scientist, and he kind of built that. I thought, right, I've got the website now, so what can I do with this website? Obviously, it had my stuff on there and various other things. I thought, well, I've got the opportunity now to give others the opportunity that I maybe didn't have to start off with, but maybe give them a bit of insight, give them a bit of help, give them a bit of a leg up, give them the tools and advice.
Just even that
and
one
help.
Share that comes from one of us.
Yeah.
Just one person. Absolutely. Oh, shit, cool. I'll give them a follow. I'll give them a like. Things like that make such a huge difference to us podcasters.
Absolutely. It really, and it started off with me and maybe a couple of other shows and people that I really enjoyed having on my show, because it was a review show to start off with, and I had people like Michael Jolly come onto the show and various other people that I class as very, very good friends, Nick Towers from Work the Left Side and various others.
Yeah, he's cool,
yeah, absolutely. And I said, look, guys, you know, let's get a collection of us together and you can kind of come up with your own show. And they come up with, now, what was it? The Turnbuckle Arms. And I think that ran for about a year and a half. And that was like a grassroots show that kind of helped to kickstart. Nick Towers, great host, great interviewer, great show. He was part of another show. And then he kind of came away from that show. We were friends. I reached out to him. I said, look, if you had the opportunity to start your very own podcast, what would it be? And he goes, well, I'd call it Work the Left Side. It'll be this, that, and the other. He goes, right, okay, let's do it. So I helped him kind of start that. He's been very much part of the community from day one. Yeah. And it's kind of grown, and I've kind of reached out to other grassroots shows, other new shows and experienced shows as well, whether they've got an audio show or a YouTube show or a mixture of the two. I said, look, we've got this platform now, the Jonas Podcaster Network. We're trying to build a bit of a community. And within that, everybody helps themselves. Everybody's kind of got a specialist role, or everybody's got expertise in this, that, and the other. Let's kind of try and build this thing. And although some of the original ideas behind the Jonas Podcaster Network no longer kind of work the same way, we've got probably about 25 to 30 active shows on there that release content on a weekly or a very regular basis. We've got other shows that are archived that don't run very often, but have, you know, some great content for however many years. And yeah, the Jonas Podcaster Network was born nearly 4 years ago. Yeah, it's kind of growing. And the exciting thing is, with the help of the guys within the network and Michael Jolly, who I couldn't do this without Michael Jolly, because he runs the Jonas Podcaster Network socials, Instagram and Twitter. But besides that, he's got his own accounts. And he really is a bit of a driving force behind sharing content, sharing new episodes, helping the wrestling community. What he does for me is I can't even pay him back, you know, even if I could, you know, it's just one of them things. he'll never be able to kind of pay back somebody like that.
After this interview, be like, yeah, here's my Christmas list.
Do it, Michael. I gave him one of my shirts. He's happy with that.
The shirt, by the way, that's an awesome shirt. If someone wanted to buy that and purchase it, where can they find it?
Well, just DM me. Find John Scott. You'll see either the logo or my face, or just search John as J-O-H-N-E-R-S, and just DM me. You know, they're very, very popular at the moment, but they're reasonably priced. We do gym vests as well, T-shirts, all different colours, all different sizes.
Do you like Angus sporting one of them as well in the gym?
Yeah. They've all got
them. I've never ever seen Marvin, by the way, sad or frowning. He's the happiest person I've seen in the wrestling community. I mean that as an absolute...
Yeah, really no, nice. I totally get it. Really nice. Totally get it. Well, but... Yeah, no, absolutely, and we work a lot together. We record the official progress hype shows, like I say, I'm down at the Electric Ballroom every show, either working on the progress merch stand or just, you know, watching the shows. But that's been another awesome opportunity, is working alongside progress, but working alongside so many other really great indie groups around the UK, and it's kind of opened my eyes up to another. It's given me a whole other appreciation for independent wrestling and for what wrestling is all about. You know, only ever having seen it as a fan from the seats or from, you know, the comfort of my own living room, and then actually getting to work dozens of promotions, hundreds of shows over the last 2 or 3 years. That's also helped to get me out there and to help me as an interviewer, but in a different... In a different environment, because I would say, going from podcasting or interviewing remotely, like us two here today, or any of the interviews I do or you do, to then doing backstage interviews, which are more like promos, more like what you would see.
Hello there. I've got a special announcement from the next guest.
It's your boy, one half of Act Two, Jack Nudson, and I will be appearing on the What Do You Call It podcast.
Yeah, heard. We just took a quick break then, last one for the interview. So John was discussing about backstage interviews. I actually said earlier in the interview that his style reminds me of the old school wrestling, Bobby Heenan and Mean Gene, that sort of, you know, just quite serious, but a bit of a, you know, oh, I never, when someone slapped your hat.
The fun thing is that obviously I'm there to work. I'm being paid to work, so I go in there with obviously having had several conversations with the promoter about that show, about the matches, about the talent, trying to get the content they want from these interviews. Otherwise they'll say, right, just give us, you know, as many pre-match interviews and post-match interviews. And of course, they're all in character as well. The vast majority of them are in character, basically. And what I do is I produce content for these promotions to fill out their social media for between shows. It's additional content for them. So it's not only the promos in the interviews, but sometimes it's an angle or a storyline that will help build towards a future match or a future show. So I'm very much at the behest of the promoter and whatever storylines or angles they want me to capture. And 9 times out of 10, I get pretty much every single wrestler that's on the card, whether they're part of any future storyline or match or not, purely because it's content. It's content for the promoter to use on their socials. And very, very important thing here is that it also gives the talent interview training as well.
Big experience. Time.
Yeah, and you know,
to develop the character, not just them like being able to speak on camera, but the actual character, because you might have to sort of twist it a little bit and ask questions that are going to sort of enhance their character. Oh shit, yeah, this will get good response in the character and development, as opposed to what do you think your match tonight, you know?
I mean, like I say, it's all done in character, which is why you mentioned, you know, it's all very much in the vein of Mean Gene Oakland, because I have to portray. I'm portraying John as, but I'm portraying the backstage host, the backstage interviewer, in line with whatever's going on at the time. But it gives that talent some valuable opportunity that they probably wouldn't get at training school, that they probably wouldn't get at their, you know, wherever they train. some training schools are very good and they do have somebody that specializes in promos and interviews, but it's nothing quite like having somebody there doing it for real. And the beauty about having me there is we can do as many takes as you want until you're happy with what you've done.
Oh, nice. Because, I didn't know that. So it's not just one take. Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, fuck off.
No, but more often than not, 9 times out of 10, it only takes one take. Mm-hmm. But for those that aren't as confident or, you know, haven't really developed or fleshed out their character yet, we can go as often or as many times as you want. Even not mentioning any names, but I've had former WWE performers do backstage interviews with me, but they've probably gone 10 takes until they're happy with the take that they're happy with because they're perfectionists.
Yeah.
So, you know, even for those that have done a million of these before or those that have done zero of these before, mm-hmm. I'm happy to kind of give them some direction, some production, some coaching tips and feedback before, during and after the interview. Just to kind of help them out. And there's numerous wrestlers that have come back to me over the years and said, you know, what you do is invaluable to the British wrestling scene because of the service that you provide. And, you know, having, you know, I bring the full set. I've got the lights, the microphone, the cameras, the backdrops and everything, bring a cameraman with me. It's all very professional. So it's almost like walking onto the backstage set of the WWE. You get that kind of vibe, you get that atmosphere. And when the lights are shining and the camera's rolling, they get into character. But yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of talent reach out to me saying what a valuable service I provide because it gives them the opportunity to flesh out their character, to make mistakes and to kind of find who their character is until they're a bit more confident about doing these sort of things in front of the camera. And I've actually seen the growth of a couple of wrestlers over the last couple of years. You know, when I first started two and a half years ago through till now, and, you know, they have fleshed out, they've developed, they've got a lot more confident, not necessarily because of the service and the opportunity that I provide as a backstage interviewer at various shows. But there's been that minuscule kind of impact that have helped them along the way. And I don't know many other people that do what I do, to be honest with you. I travel around the country working from promotion to promotion. And I don't know if anybody...
I do think you do need to give yourself a pat on the back. Barry Horowitz style, and just acknowledge what you have achieved, and not just the network, not the community, and not just the backstage interview style, but just in general, like you yourself and how you conduct yourself and the professionalism that you have. It's, you know, there's not many, not just in the UK, but I think in all of wrestling, interviews that do what you do and offer the service that you do.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. And obviously, you know, as I said earlier, I've made a ton of mistakes, but it's been a massive learning curve. I've got to a level and a stage that I'm happy with, but not stopping there, whether it be, you know, want to work for more promotions, want to work at more and more shows and interview more and more talents and help where I can, but looking to evolve the Wrestling with Jonna show and see how far I can take that. Although where I've got the live version of Wrestling with Jonna at the moment, I'm struggling to think of how much more I can add to it or how much further I can evolve, but I do have one or two ideas on how I want to take the show in the future.
And I know you're going to succeed. I know it's going to elevate even more, but I know the fact that you're proud of where it is now. John, I've got one more question, and usually I end the chats with three dream dinner guests, but I'm not necessarily going to do it that way, but it's still going to be the number three. I want you, from SummerSlam 1992, from the entire restaurant, and because I know a lot of the talent have now passed away, so this is a fantasy podcast. If you could pick three wrestlers, or even talents maybe, because, you know, you had Vince McMahon there, and, you know, just three people that were involved in SummerSlam 1992 on your network, on your platform, who would you pick, and the short reason as to why you want them there on Jonna's podcast?
To interview them.
Three guests. Wow, okay. SummerSlam 92. I know if they are fantasy, before someone just makes that weird question.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the first one that jumped to mind, and when I say this name, it's going to be obvious as to why I want this person or would want this person on the show. And there's still a possibility because this person is still alive. Repo Man. I mean, come on, Repo Man. Who wouldn't want Repo Man on the show?
You're not taking the piss, are you?
Not at all. Yes, he could do all of that. I'd just be in fits of giggles. It'd be the best guest. He's got to be a full character, of course.
I was going to say, like, I don't want Barry Darson. I don't care about him. I want character. Repo Man.
Yeah, Repo Man. I mean, 100%. The second one, and obviously because he's just an absolutely batshit crazy character. But, you know, honestly, from my early fandom, he was one of the characters that I really enjoyed watching. I always loved watching the bad guys. The bad guys were so much more entertaining, which is why I was always a massive Ric Flair fan back in the 90s and when he won the Rumble in 92 and everything like that. Just Ric Flair all day long, just his persona, his character. Ric Flair might be on that list, but I'm not going to say his name just yet, but certainly Repo Man, Bobby the Brain Heenan. I mean, why do you not want Bobby the Brain Heenan? Probably just the great...
Just last year, I just really get heartbroken because as someone who's known for his voice and it got taken away from him, and it's just so sad, but he's always in good spirits. Like, I have friends that I've met him at conventions, and he was always, though he couldn't communicate with his mouth, he would still communicate with his body, and you could still see he was, you know, just happy to be there.
Can you imagine the stories he would tell? Can you imagine the stories he would tell, the people that he's been around? He had done everything. Probably one of the greatest minds in the wrestling business, one of the funniest people as well. But the stories he would tell in his prime, if I were to kind of pluck him out of SummerSlam 92 and put him into 2023 Wrestling with Jonas, Bobby the Brain Heenan, oh my God, I could get days worth of
intended. Like, you would be able to pick his brain, Bobby the Brain, and just listen to him. Not even like you just, I wouldn't even have to ask him questions. If he wanted to talk, I'd let him fucking talk. Like, record, you tell me any stories. Just be like a little kid, you know, around his granddad or something.
Yeah. The other one. I know it wouldn't be Rocco, the ventriloquist dummy that came down on the front of one of the Harley Davidsons. Yeah, me. That was where the Legion of Doom started going downhill, in my estimation.
Like, we're off now.
Okay, so a third one. This is a great question. And honestly, I'm going to go with Sherry Martel.
I love it.
Yeah, Sherry Martel, because I think, once again, similar to Bobby the Brain, I mean, Sherry Martel was an underrated pioneer in the wrestling business, A, because she was a female in the business and achieved so much, but she wasn't recognized for how good a talent she was in the ring. Yeah. And that wasn't utilized, certainly on the mainstream, certainly in WWF at the time. But where she was utilized was her larger than life, over the top character, the way she would take bumps in the ring and throw herself around for the boys, you know, in the ring. And the stories that she could tell, the people that she worked with, and, you know, just, I think that at the time there was nobody else like her in the business. And I think at the time, you know,
you had Miss Elizabeth, but she was, you know, she was very royal.
She wasn't the talent. She wasn't. You know,
was just a manager. She'd never get involved.
Yeah. And, you know,
obviously, Sherry was different. She didn't give a shit. She'd climb in the cage. She'd slap the warrior. She just, honestly, she was the boys.
But she was a pioneer. She was one of the boys, and she would treat herself like one of the boys. And if there was a spot in a match, you know, she would say, right, just throw me around like you would one of the boys. She didn't want to be treated any differently. But the story she would tell, the journey she went on, you know, she would have a lot of funny stories, but also a lot of shit experiences to talk about as well.
Yeah.
So Repo Man, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Sherry Martel.
Fantastic lineup. Oh, mate, for your answer,
great question.
Thank you. I was like, when we took the break, I was just like, do you know what? I'm going to twist the question because I think it's your answer, and you absolutely delivered with your answer. I mean, one day, you know, just in your imaginary world, it can happen. But that'd be awesome. John, thank you very much for your time. It's going to be awesome when I speak to you again. Who knows what show I'm going to see you next? Maybe Progress, maybe a big one in WWE. I know they're doing France and Germany, but they'll be back in the UK. So maybe see you then. But I'm going to keep in contact with you as I do. Going to support everything you do and your channel does and your network does.
No,
everyone's involved in it. I love you all. So we all support each other. If you are a podcast out there, and I'm not just, you know, trying to be John Salesman, but, you know, I've been there. I was only in the podcast and for about a couple of months. Well, I've got some big names. I kind of jumped the gun a little bit. I kind of get stuck in terms of, okay, who can actually get to sort of support me, not just pester my friends who don't like wrestling. And then I sort of stumbled across this. John reached out to me and sort of now, like 2.5 years later, and it's allowed my channel to grow naturally.
You know, the thing is, I mean, otherwise, and I don't mean to kind of interrupt and...
No, mate, go for it.
I think our relationship kind of got stronger when you've gone through the difficult times with your show as well. When, you know, I think there was one time when you lost all your content on YouTube and that started getting, when you was in two minds about whether to or not, you know, and I know we had a few conversations over that, and, you know, more recently where, you know, you've kind of hit a bit of a brick wall and maybe your love for it wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
And I've tried to kind of encourage you, but
always, you know,
you're a great content creator, but we all hit these brick walls and we all need a little bit of a break sometimes and then come back to
I'm
it.
Human, guys, in case
fresh enthusiasm, fresh enthusiasm. But I think, I mean, no sooner had you said that, you got the opportunity to interview Scott D'Amore, and, you know, I think you're off to the races again. But I think if you are a content creator, and, you know, I'm not blowing smoke up my own arse here, but for my own detriment, I've not taken a single break in 5 years. And, you know, that, some weeks I've really struggled to go into an interview because of, oh shit, you know, I'm at the wit's end, you know, my mental capacity, my thinking capacity is kind of rock bottom.
It's that,
but I've kind of,
that you have, you know, like no days off in a way. It's just
you've got to, and it is a grind, and it's not for everybody. That's the other thing that people need to realize is it's not for everybody. I think what you've achieved with, you know, your show, I'm proud as punch for you and everything you've done. And like I say, you've always got friends out there within the community. And yeah, you don't need to be producing content every day or every week or every month. As long as, you know, you produce content whenever you want to, and as long as it's the right type of content for you, as long as you're happy and enjoying it, that is the most important thing. And I think that you're doing that all day long, so keep up the good work.
No, I appreciate it, mate. I think you nailed it as well. Now, I think that's advice, not just for myself, but for the listeners out there, any new content makers out there, they're just a bit unsure. Look, it might not be for you, but give it a go. At least say you've tried it. And also, don't take it personally if the rest of it doesn't want to do it. Although, if they do agree and don't show up, then that's a different story. But I'm not going to get into that. Yeah. That does happen, unfortunately. But it's been a pleasure.
Can I say one more thing? Before we go. We spoke earlier about me starting off as a grassroots content creator.
Yeah.
I know you did as well, starting off the network, helping people that were just beginning, giving them advice and everything. The Jonas Podcasting Network in 2024 is expanding. I want to get more shows, whether they be wrestling based or not. I want to expand the wrestling genres, the Jonas Podcasting Network, because in the title, Jonas Podcasting Network, it doesn't say anything about wrestling in there. So it doesn't have to be strictly about wrestling. But if there's any content creators out there, podcasters, whether it be wrestling, football, soccer, you know, whatever it might be,
no,
judo.
You've got no excuse to call it soccer, mate. Take that. I'm not even going to edit this out.
For your American viewers, I said that.
Thank you.
Audience, because I'm sure you've got viewers over.
Oh,
States
I do. And when they say, I just have to correct them immediately. But continue. Plug.
You know, flower arranging, whatever it might be, train spotting. If you've got a show about train spotting, then reach out to me, Wrestling with Jonas, John Scott.
Yeah.
Find me, the Jonas Podcasting Network, reach out. So we are expanding, get in touch. Also, if you're a content creator and just want a bit of advice or just want to ask a question, then, you know, I'm there for that as well.
Awesome, John. We are now officially at the end of this interview. Is there anything you want to plug, anything you want to promote, or anything else you would like to address the listeners? Because we are...
I just want to say thank you to George for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure, a real honour. And I've done a lot of these recently, and it's probably been the best one. Don't tell anybody, but it's been the best one too. You're a great host. You don't give yourself enough credit. And just thank you to everybody that supported me over this 5-year journey. And I couldn't have done it without the people. Like I say, it starts off with one, it starts off with two, and then you start to build a bit of a community, a bit of an audience. I just want to thank everybody that's ever listened or watched an episode of Wrestling with Jonas or interacted in any way with any bit of content I've ever done. And I'm just getting started.
Damn right. So in the beginning, my man, John, thank you very much for your time. Where can the listeners find you on social media? I know you said they can DM you, But where can they?
They can. Just search Johners, Johners, or Wrestling with Johners, and you'll see this beautiful face or this logo. Just click on it and send me a DM. But happy to interact, happy to say hi. And like I say, just thank you to everybody for your support. And George, you're a top man. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you very much, mate. Happy fifth anniversary. Being an awesome chat. Really enjoyed that. If you can like this video, subscribe to the account. That'd be much appreciated. Go follow John on his network, on his YouTube channel, and check out his merch as well. But for now, everyone, I hope you all have a fantastic day. Go watch SummerSlam 92, because I'm going to do that after this interview. But everyone, peace. Oh, the British Bulldog's going to win, whether he wants to or not. That reference is going to go over so many people's heads, but for the ones that get it, you get it. Take care. Hello there, I've got a special announcement for my next guest.
Hello, this is Jonas from the Wrestling with Jonas podcast, and you're watching, what do you call it, podcast?
He's going to come on the podcast, whether he wants to or not. Watch the podcast, listen to it, get the reference. Yeah.